Good afternoon and welcome to the Narrow Path radio broadcast. My name is Steve Gregg and we are live as we usually are from 2 to 3 in the afternoon Pacific Daylight Time. And if you have a question about the Bible that has been rattling around in your head and giving you trouble, or you have a disagreement with the host and you've heard this host say something on there that's rattling around your head giving you trouble and you want to express a disagreement, feel free to do that too. We've got a free line open for you, and if you want to call me, it will cost you nothing at all, except the trouble of dialing the number and talking with us here on the air, which is not really very costly at all. The number is 1-800-438-5090. Our lines are open right now, so if you want to give me a call, this is a great time to access our audience and myself. The number, 1-800-438-5090. Now, I want to make an announcement to our KKMC listeners. That's anyone in California who's listening on the radio, because we're only on one radio station in California. We're also on stations in Oregon. And we have listeners all over the country and no doubt all over the world via the Internet. But those who are listening, if you're in California right now and you're listening to me on the radio, you're listening to KKMC. And you're in the Salinas or Monterey or Santa Cruz areas. Now, those who live in those areas, I make this announcement once a month because it happens once a month. We have a gathering in Santa Cruz monthly. Generally, it's on a Saturday night. And it's going to be this Saturday night. If you're interested in coming to this gathering, it is an open Bible discussion. It's held in a home, a living room. And it's usually a pretty good-sized group of listeners who gather together to enjoy each other's fellowship and also to participate in an open dialogue about the things of God and the things of the Christian life and of the Scriptures. It's open in the same sense that this radio program is open. Any subject can be raised and can be discussed. Anyone who's got a question can ask it, and anyone who thinks they know the answer can have a hack at giving the answer. Of course, I'm there as well. I will generally give what I consider to be answers, but it's much more open than that. It's not just people asking me questions. It's an open fellowship over the Word of God. We do this once a month also in Salinas, and we do it a little less frequently in Orange County, and we do it even a little less frequently than that up in Camas, Washington. We have these different locations where we have these occasional gatherings. But in Santa Cruz, it's monthly, and this month, it's this weekend. It's going to be this Saturday night, 7 o'clock. If you've never been there and you would like to find out where it is, you can call this number. Now, I'm going to give you a number. If you can write it down, good. If you can't, you can find it at our website. The number can be found there. But the number to call for directions to this gathering is area code 831-475-8301. That's area code 831-475-8301. And if you didn't get that and you want to get it from our website, the website is www.thenarrowpath.com. Now, you'll go to the link that says announcements. I might as well just tell you that right now, we don't have June's announcements posted. We will in a few days' time. And so this Saturday is not mentioned at our website right now, but the last time we met there is still posted. So you can find that phone number for our monthly Santa Cruz meeting at our website, posted under for last month's meeting. And within a few days, we'll have the updated announcements for June and July. Okay, we're going to go to the phones and talk to a favorite caller of ours. I think a favorite of mine, and I know others have said the same thing. He's been calling for, well, longer than some of our listeners have been alive, probably, if you're a teenager. This is Jim from Torrington, Connecticut. By the way, we do have a line open still if you'd like to call. The number is 1-800-438-5090. Jim, welcome to the Narrow Path. Thanks so much for calling.
Hey, Steve. How are you?
Great.
Hey, listen, maybe next week I was going to, I kind of changed my topic here, but maybe next week I'd like to talk a little more about 1 John 2:19.
Okay.
And why that, that passage has to almost be universal. But I don't want to get, I want to get to something else. I think it was Monday night. I was listening to your show again. And you started in on taxation. And, I don't know, Steve. I mean, sometimes, is your view towards taxation really a biblical view or a godly view? Because I, you know, after you had said that, I started reading, Romans 13. And, you know, and it talks about that, therefore you must be subject not only for the sake of wrath, but also for conscience sake. For because of this, you also pay taxes, for they are God's ministers attending continually to this very thing. You know, therefore, you know, render taxes to whom taxes is due and customs to whom customs is due. I mean, this government is appointed by God, right? It is superintended by God. And, you know, you have such a visceral reaction sometimes to taxes and taxation. I wonder if that's really a biblical view.
Well, first of all, I want to say that my view of taxation is not at all visceral. I don't have a stake in the matter because my income is so low, I don't pay taxes. In fact, I get earned income allowance every year because my earned income is so small.
Right.
So, you know, I have nothing to be gained by or lost by any policies of taxation. My interest in the subject of taxation is based on two things. One is the general concern about justice, which is, of course, a prevailing concern of God throughout the Old and the New Testament, and should be every Christian's concern.
Correct.
And so I'm interested in a just tax system, only because of a disinterested concern about justice on my part. And I think that everything that the government does should be required to be just.
Okay, yeah, okay.
Okay. The other thing is my understanding of the government's authorization that you mentioned in Romans chapter 13. It says that we should pay taxes, which we should.
Mm-hmm.
Because the government officials are God's ministers attending continually, Paul says, to this very thing.
Right.
Now, what is this very thing? Clearly what Paul is saying is we should pay taxes because, in a sense, the government officials are full-time ministers of God.
Right.
And full-time ministers need to be supported.
Mm-hmm.
So we should support them in their ministry. But he identifies their ministry as what he calls this very thing. Well, what is this very thing? He has already stated it earlier in the passage. They are God's ministers appointed to execute judgment upon the wicked. That's what God has ordained the government to do.
Well, okay, let me interject, Steve.
Okay.
You think that is the only thing God has ordained governments to do?
Essentially, yes. There's a parallel to this in 1 Peter chapter 2, as you probably know. And it says there in 1 Peter 2:13 that the kings and those who are sent by them have been sent to punish evildoers and to commend or praise those who do well.
Well, sure.
So the purpose of the government is to restrain and punish criminal activity and to encourage just and good activity. Okay, so that is all the government is really needed for. The government is needed to punish criminals, and the reason for that is that the average citizen doesn't really have the ability to defend himself against organized criminals, or the average citizen or woman or child, of course, can't defend themselves against stronger aggressors, and
mm-hmm.
therefore there is an organization that God has ordained to do that, and that is the government, and they're to make laws that are just laws. And they're supposed to enforce those laws in a just manner, and the net effect of that should be the protection of innocent people.
Okay, now, certainly the government of Paul's day, I mean, whether he's talking about the Roman government or even the Jewish, you know, government, certainly didn't restrict themselves to just, you know, enforcing death penalty or, you know, certain laws against, you know, I mean.
That's true.
Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. They didn't. But Paul, of course, is telling us what God has ordained the government to do. He's not telling us what the government officials actually end up doing. It's like a person might be said to be ordained by God to preach the gospel.
Right.
That doesn't tell us whether he really does preach the gospel or not. It means that God has appointed him and called him to do it. If he does, good. If he doesn't, then he's failing in his commission. And likewise, Paul doesn't tell us that the government always does restrict their activities to those that God has ordained. But we should support the government when they do, and insofar as they do. You'll find very few governments that are willing to restrain their activities to only those that God has ordained them to do. But the point I understand Paul to be making is that when God has ordained the government to do a thing, they do that thing with God's authorization and should be supported by the Christian in their doing of it.
Right.
Now, if God has not authorized the government to do a thing, then their doing it is without authorization. That is, without divine authorization. If might makes right, then a dictator can do whatever he wants to do, and no one can say boo about it. But if we're talking about what God has authorized and what Christians recognize as the authentic function of government, we can say, well, God has authorized governments to do a certain righteous thing. When they do it, they are acting as God's ministers in the doing of it.
All right, Steve, but you see, there's the question, because what is unrighteous about, all right, government comes, takes $10 out of your pocket, right?
Okay.
Takes that $10 and he buys a child food, or he helps pay for that child's medical care. Now, sure, I can understand you may not want him to take that $10, but why is that? Just because he forced, you know, by the force of law, he's taking that from you. You know, I mean, I don't, you know, I would.
Well, let me ask you this, Jim. Suppose a group of thugs takes over some remote town, and you happen to live in that town.
Right.
And they stop you on the street, you know, every time you drive down the street, and at gunpoint, they take whatever money you have on you, or some percentage of it, and they say, we're giving this money to one of our favorite charities. Well, frankly, just because they have guns and they're thugs doesn't mean that they have the right to take your money and give it to their favorite charity, especially
when
you might prefer to give it to your favorite charity.
Right, and I'll tell you what. I mean, this is the point, Steve. Those thugs were not elected in a democracy. The reason we have welfare and the reason we're about to get universal medical for everybody is because we as the people have voted these officials into office. They are not forcibly taking money from me. I mean, for me, yeah, maybe I don't agree with the policy, but the majority of these people, of the people of the country, do. So the people of the country have said, we want welfare. We want Medicare, Medicaid. We want universal health care. As a matter of fact, it's like 79% of the people in this country want universal health care. So it's not the government forcing. It's the people saying.
Well, the people in this case are the government. We're a government of the people, for the people, by the people.
Yeah.
So, but okay, we're not talking about, when I talk about, when someone asks me what I think about universal health care supported by taxation.
Right.
I'm telling you what I think of it from a Christian standpoint as a moral issue. Okay. Now that there may, the time may come when the government of this country, which is the people, mm-hmm. elect to establish a system that I consider is unjust, I'm not saying you shouldn't pay your taxes. I'm not recommending a tax revolt.
Right.
If they say you've got to pay your taxes or we'll come and put you in jail, hey, I think Christians should pay their taxes. That's fine. They should do that. But if you ask me, if we're talking theoretically, philosophically, ethically, about the question of whether the government should take money from one citizen and give it to someone else who the government thinks is
right.
poor, I'm saying no, the Bible does not authorize the government to do that.
Well, it doesn't say it shouldn't do it either, though.
Well,
I mean,
the question here is, of course, does the Bible say who owns money?
Well, yeah, not really.
Well, kind of. I mean,
yeah,
remember, the Bible indicates that wealth is generated by labor.
Right.
And that the laborer is worthy of his wages.
Sure.
Right? Okay, so the Bible indicates that in God's sight, a person who works and generates wealth has a rightful claim on that wealth.
Wait,
is that correct?
A couple of points, Steve. Wait a minute. I have to get in here a little bit, first of all.
Sure.
First of all, I want to go back to your analogy about the hoodlums coming into town and putting a gun to our heads, okay?
Okay.
that isn't happening for the majority of people, because the majority of people want it. The hoodlums are not coming in and putting a gun to anybody's head. The hoodlums are only, they're doing what they come into the town and the people say, here, take our money, go spend it on your charity. That's what they're doing because the majority agree with that. So now the minority is having a gun put to their head, but the majority.
That's right.
So,
that's right. The majority are the hoodlums, and the minority who object to it are being forced to surrender their money at gunpoint.
Okay, let me bring up another point. In the Old Testament, okay. When people raised crops and that type of thing, they had to leave the whole outside of their fields open for strangers and for beggars to come along and take what they wanted.
That's right.
And they took a lot, from what I understand, from what I read over the years. I mean, they could take quite a bit of this man's labor. You know, I mean, and that was a law. It was forced upon them. The same with the year of Jubilee, Steve, where if you had accrued land over the years, you had to give all that land back to the families that you have taken
from,
even if you took it legitimately or bought it legitimately.
That's right. Exactly.
Okay.
Well, let me put that in perspective as I understand it.
Okay.
Okay. From the Christian point of view, and from Israel's point of view, in the Old Testament, God's people have to surrender whatever God tells them to surrender.
Right.
Okay? In Israel, God made them surrender a tenth to pay the Levites.
Mm-hmm.
He made them surrender some portion for the poor.
Right.
He made them surrender, you know, the corners of their land and so forth. Because the land belonged to God, not to people. The Israelites were not the owners of the land in God's sight. He said, the land is mine and you are tenants on my land. And therefore, he could say, okay, I'm going to let you be tenants of this land. And I'm going to let you keep most of the produce. However, with my land, I want the corners and the edges of it left for the poor to go to. And that's God's business to do. Okay?
Right.
God can do that. God didn't do that. God didn't set up the American government or the German government or the British government or the Chinese government. He didn't set up by laying out the laws and so forth in the Bible for them. And the laws and the taxation policies of these governments are made by people,
but wait a minute.
God.
See, you're kind of going past my point again. My point is that you say the labor is worthy of his wages. Well, yes, true. But at times, in this situation with old Israel, well, no. They had to give up. Probably what they didn't want to give up. You know what I'm saying? They probably didn't want to give all the other parts of their crop or, you know, this or that. Sure, God has the right to do that. But
well, then they could join another religion if they wanted to. That's the thing.
Yeah, they could have left, yeah.
Yeah.
But again, my point is, the Bible doesn't really explicitly speak to this. I mean, I know you're kind of inferring from some things, and you may be more or less correct, but, you know, if I'm worried about, you know, you getting upset because I took $10 out of your pocket, or a kid really dying from not getting medical care, I'm sorry, Steve, between the two, you know, it's almost like the lesser of two evils. I can't say that we should not give that kid medical care.
You're saying the kid has an innate right to medical care?
No, I'm saying we as a charitable people should give him medical care.
Right. Exactly, Jim. The charitable people should give him medical care. I agree with you.
Yeah, and
charity is by definition voluntary.
No, right. But
if someone takes your money at gunpoint and gives that money to a person in need, who is being charitable? You who had your money stolen to you? That's not charity. Or the government who took it at gunpoint? That's not charity either.
No.
They're giving your money, not theirs.
No, wait a minute. If I agree with the policy and I fight for the policy and then I give my tax money to the policy, Steve, I am being charitable. Now, you may not be because you don't want it taken from you.
No, wait, Jim, hang on a minute. Wait. If you vote for a policy of universal health care.
Right. And they take tax dollars.
You're volunteering to let them take some of your money, and you're being charitable. No, that's not the way it is.
Why not?
You could take that money without the health care system you're talking about. You could take the same amount of money and give it to a charity that will help that poor person. What you're voting for is the government will take it from everybody else as well.
But you're
not just volunteering your money. You're volunteering everybody else's money.
I am volunteering my money. So,
you can do that without voting. See?
I know, but look, what I'm saying, Steve, for me, it is a charitable act.
Okay.
Because, you know.
Okay, it's a different way of seeing it. My understanding is this. If you're interested in charity, then you don't have to authorize the government to take your money by force. you can simply give your money to the poor. The only reason you would want the government to take it from you by force is because you want the government to take other people's money by force who maybe don't feel as charitable as you do.
They're not taking it by force if I agree with the policy and I'm for the policy.
Well, right. That's right. You agree with the policy. What you're doing though is asking the government to take money from people who don't agree with the policy.
Which
is not charitable. Right. That's not charitable of the government or of the people.
For them it isn't, Steve.
Right.
But
why is it for you? Why isn't it more just for you to say, listen, I make a lot of money. I'm very willing to part with a certain percentage of my money to help the poor.
Right.
Therefore, I will do so. I'll give my money to the church or to a nonprofit organization that helps the poor.
Okay, because this is why, Stephen. I'm going to tell you why, okay? If you go back to the late 1800s and the early 1900s, there was no welfare system. There was nothing in this country for the poor. There was no dole, no welfare, no help with medicine, and people were starving in their hovels. Listen, the church did not give what it needed to give, and the church probably couldn't raise that kind of money. If you know the history of New York City or Boston, with the immigrants came, it was horrible. They were dying of every kind of preventable sickness. They were starving in their homes. Yes, the church helped a little bit. They gave what they could, but nowhere near what was needed. So we're back to the same situation. The church will never give enough money to solve these problems, to help that kid on welfare. And so you got a choice. The kid dies or becomes sick or is completely uneducated, or you help them. It's as simple as that. The church can never keep up with this kind of need. I'm sorry. They didn't before.
Well, okay, you're a pragmatist. I'm a purist, okay? I'm interested in what is justice.
Even if the kid dies, you're interested in outcome. Even if the kid dies, you don't care.
Well, of course I care. I care about kids die every day, and old people die every day, and I care a great deal, especially if they die unprepared to meet God. I'm very concerned. And I'm also very concerned for the people who lose their kids and so forth. Yeah, I mean, I'm not unconcerned about this. The question is, okay, we see horrible things happening in the world, including children starving. Always one that people like to bring up because it yanks everybody's heartstrings. But it's true though, Steve. But what I'm saying is, children starving is not the only injustice that happens in the world, or the only tragedy that happens in the world. The real question is, is there any limit to the things we are expected to do to prevent tragedies? Would it be right, for example, if we don't have health care, and I don't have enough money to help the poor, for me to go and rob a bank so I can give the money to the poor? Is that a good thing?
No.
That's not a Christian option, is it?
No.
But what if I say, Jim, I know these kids are going to starve to death if I don't rob this bank and give them the money.
You know, as a Christian, it's not an option for us. I wouldn't do that. But, Steve, you keep equating that with taxation, and it's not
that's
the
right.
same. It's not
it
the
is.
Same. I'm sorry.
It is.
The majority of people in this country have decided to do A, B, or C. And let me tell you, I don't agree with universal health care, or even welfare, just to a degree, because it's gone too far one way. But my point is, your analogy, the way you compare these two, I just don't think that's right. And I think if there's a good end, Steve, if it helps a child get an education, to live, to get medical care, and to get food, where they wouldn't have these things, you know, I can't see a real strong objection from my Christian point of view.
Okay, well, like I said, for me, it's a matter of justice. It's a matter of, is there a principle, or are we to be pragmatists?
Okay, well, let me ask you.
If we're to be pragmatists, that means we're only concerned about the good result. We're not concerned about the method. Okay. Or the justice of the method.
Isn't it a matter of justice for society to make sure kids have food and have medical care? Isn't that a matter of justice too?
Well, it depends. I guess maybe you and I define justice differently. I understand the word justice not simply to refer to any desirable thing. Some things that are desirable may not be just, and some things that are just may not be enjoyable or desirable.
Didn't God chide Israel time and time again for not being just towards the poor, for not helping?
Right. And what were they doing? They were not giving the poor, the widows and the orphans, just treatment in the courts. They were taking advantage of those who could not bribe the judges. and therefore the poor were being given injustice because their oppressors had money to bribe the judges. There was injustice in the court system.
But
now,
the
failure to help the poor in general is a lack of mercy, not a lack of justice. Okay?
Are you saying that there's nothing in the Old Testament about their lack of helping the poor, clothe and feed the poor either?
Oh, of course there is, but that, like I said, the failure to feed the poor is not a failure to be just, it's a failure to be merciful.
Okay, so
you see, let me tell you what justice is.
All right.
Justice is when you uphold the intrinsic rights that a person has. Injustice is when you violate the intrinsic rights that people have, okay? So if a person has the right to be paid for his labor and you don't pay him, that's an injustice.
Okay.
But a slave doesn't have a right to be paid for his labor.
Right.
That's the point. The question is, if a man has the right to be paid for his labor, whatever he has a right to, if you withhold that right, that's an injustice. Now, if a man has no intrinsic right to your money, let's say he's a sick man and he's poor. Mm-hmm. He has no intrinsic right to your money. Giving him money is not an act of justice. That's an act of mercy. Okay?
So
the question is the government called to do what's just, or is it called to do what's merciful?
Well, yeah, okay, and you're going to go back to your Romans thing and say that's the only thing the government can do.
Let me ask you this, Jim. Jim, if the government is supposed to be merciful, what should they do to criminals?
I'll tell you what we should do with criminals. We should put them in prison. Because
that's not very merciful.
I'll tell you why it's merciful. It's merciful to your neighbor because this guy may come out and hurt your neighbor again.
Okay.
And that's apples and oranges, Steve, and you know.
No, it's not really, because we're still talking about what is just and what is mercy. Here's how I would take what you just said and apply it to the question you first asked. It is merciful, or just at least, it's just and good to put a criminal in court, although it is not being immediately merciful to the criminal, it is being merciful to the innocent victims.
That's
okay?
Now
let's take it this way. Suppose a poor man dies because the government did not take somebody else's money and give it to him.
Right.
Okay? Well, is that unmerciful? Well, it depends.
Yes.
Is it merciful? If it's merciful to put a criminal in jail so that you don't violate the rights of innocent citizens,
mm-hmm.
then maybe it's just as violate the rights of innocent wage earners.
Because with innocent victims, with a criminal, we're talking about actual physical harm. This guy gets out, I mean, he's a drunken driver, he's a rapist, you know, he frauds, he steals, whatever. I mean, we have to protect society with that. You know, and you've turned that around to wanting to help children. You know, and I do say children.
Well, Jim, your argument's entirely emotional. I'm talking entirely about the question of what justice is.
No, I'm talking about what mercy is. Does mercy triumph over judgment, or does judgment triumph over mercy here?
Well, mercy is the province of the church.
And
justice is the province of the government.
We don't have enough money to help everybody like we should. You know that.
Well, God has enough.
Huh?
God has enough for whatever needs to be done.
Well, how come it wasn't being done in the 1800s and 1900s, earlier?
Maybe people weren't giving God what he owed, what's owed to him. You know?
I don't know. That's
often the case. That's often the case. But, you know, if Christians do not steward their money in such a way as to help the poor and to do the things that God wants them to do with the surplus he's given them, then, of course, the judgment of God may come in the form of oppressive government. And that oppressive government may come and take their money against their wishes and do what Christians should have done voluntarily.
I think, Steve, I think it's pretty obvious, back in, like I said, the 1800s and 1900s, when we didn't have these programs run by the government, these kids were starving. People were dying of ailments. They had no reason dying of. I mean, it was just a horrible life. And, you know, I'm sure the church gave what it can. But, you know, there's just so many more people than there is what the church can probably afford anyway. I just don't, you know, it does come down to mercy over justice.
Yeah, it does. I mean, the church is the merciful institution. That's what God ordained us to do, to forgive sinners, to turn the other cheek, to do things the government cannot do.
The government does do it, though.
No, the government's not allowed to do that. The government is not allowed to turn the other cheek. If a criminal, you know, does something criminal, the government is required by justice to punish the criminal, not to forgive them.
You see, you're going to turn that around and say, because we have to, you know, keep the criminal away from society because you may hurt somebody, you can turn around and say, that's a good argument for why we shouldn't collectively see kids or give them health care.
Well, no, I'm not turning anything around. What I'm doing is trying to consistently understand what the role of mercy is and what the role of justice is and who is called of God to show mercy and who is called to enforce justice.
Well, you know, these things aren't that black and white. You always talk about me being not being nuanced, you know?
I think justice is black and white. There are people who have certain rights.
Right.
I, as a Christian, am obligated to be just to them in that I do not violate their rights.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also obligated to be merciful. I'm supposed to be personally just and personally merciful. But it's not personally just for me to go and take your money and give it away. That's not merciful on my part, nor just, because
you're not taking my money away, Steve. That's the point. You're not. The government is through taxation, through the power they have, the power that was given to them by the people. You know,
Jim, if I need health care, okay, I'm a poor man, Jim.
Yeah.
If we get universal health care and I need health care, the government will pay for my health care. That's just where things stand. I will... Even now, I could probably get Medi-Cal or some other government program to cover my medical needs if I had such needs. I don't. And if I did, I would not ask the government to pay for them.
That's all good and well, Stephen.
I'll tell you why not. It's a matter of Christian principle with me.
I might say,
hey, the government's got tons of money. Let them pay for it. But where did they get that money? They took it from other people who did not voluntarily give it to me.
Yeah,
it was taken against their will.
It's against the will of some.
I'm receiving stolen goods. That the government stole them doesn't make it any better. You know, Ahab and Jezebel stole the land of Naboth, his vineyard. The prophet didn't say that was okay. The government didn't have the right just to take that because they wanted it.
It's not stolen goods, Steve, when it's taxation. I don't think God views it as stolen goods.
Well, taxation, what is taxation? In some countries, they have over 60 or 70% taxation. Is that not stealing because it's taxation?
Why didn't Paul say that, you know, but this is the only thing, you know? Paul is saying give taxes to whom taxes is due. It wasn't always just spent on keeping what was just. Sure, he argued that.
It should have been. Right, it was not, but it should have been. That's the point. But if you're asking me what I believe should be, I'll tell you what should be. I'm not telling you what is. But if we only accept what is without criticism and never talk about what should be, we have no grounds for improving anything.
You don't see no New Testament people arguing against that, though.
Against what?
All right.
No, you're right. Paul said, what have I have to do to judge those who are outside the church? God judges them. God will judge governments, and God will judge nations that do unjust things. And it's not my place to lower the boom on them. But if someone asks me my opinion about policies, I'm going to answer that on the basis of what the Bible says is justice and what the Bible says governments are supposed to do.
And this is my other quick point, and I'm sure you have other calls. I just want to bring
up,
you said about you not accepting medical care. But, Steve, that's, you know, if you were going on a road and you got in a bad car accident, you ended up in a hospital unconscious, and they did all they could to save your life, and it cost $200,000. Well, you know what, Steve? You're not going to be able to pay it back. You could pay the game $50, $100 a month, but...
I will take responsibility for it.
Of course you will, but you'll never...
I won't ask any taxpayers to take responsibility for my medical...
No, but we will take responsibility for it because...
That's what I object to.
No, because the hospital will increase costs on other people to cover for you. That's what they do.
Well, no, I'll make payments. I'll pay what I have to pay.
Yeah, you pay, but you won't finish it in this lifetime.
Maybe not, but I'm not going to take. I'll take responsibility for it, and I'll keep paying for it as long as I'm in the position to do anything.
I'm just saying it may be so far gone that you wouldn't be able to. You know,
well, that's
so much money. You know,
that's possible.
All right. Anyways, I'll let you go. I'm sure you have more questions. It was an interesting conversation, Steve.
Yeah, Jim. Hey, thanks for your call. It's always interesting.
Okay. Thank you. Bye bye.
God bless you, man.
Bye bye.
All right. Let's talk next to Craig, who's been waiting for 15 minutes to talk to us from Round Rock, Texas. Craig, welcome to the Narrow Path.
Hey, Steve.
Hi.
Hey, I was enjoying y'all's conversation immensely. I wanted to kind of add something to that, and which I'm surprised. I agree with you, but something that both of y'all have not really addressed, especially Jim, we don't live in a democracy. We live in a constitutional republic. which means it's not a rule by a majority. So if the majority of people in this country want universal health care, then okay, it's all of a sudden it's legal. It's appropriate. That's not the way it works. Something has to be, we're governed by the Constitution of the United States, as the Founding Fathers, you know, instituted. So if we're to be obeyed the governing authorities, as Roman tells us, we're to obey the Constitution. Mm-hmm. Now, the Constitution can be amended, but there's a process for having that done. The Constitution grants no authority to government to do what Jim is talking about.
Well, that's an excellent point. The Constitution specifically says what the powers of the federal government are, and then specifically says the federal government will have no other powers than those
right.
which the Constitution gives it. So
it's extremely limited to the federal government.
Exactly. So no matter how many people want it to be otherwise,
right.
the Constitution is still the law of the land until, as you say, until it is amended. It has not been amended.
Yeah, and so for somebody to advance a view like Jim, he's actually encouraging, maybe not known to him, he's encouraging somebody to go against the governing authority. The Founding Fathers never envisioned this huge federal government that we have today. I mean, it's been incremental. A big step toward this happened in the Civil War with Lincoln. You know, he totally ignored whole sections of the Constitution, had editors of newspaper locked up and imprisoned for speaking out against claiming that the states had a right to pull from the Union, and that's the whole thing.
Hey, spoken as a true Southerner, brother.
Yeah, you know, so many people think that, oh, great, great, noble, benevolent Lincoln, he just cared about all the black slaves. Well, if you actually look into the history and study it a little bit, that's not really what that whole thing was about. You know, he was about grabbing power for the federal government, getting centralized power, and I think as Christians, one, we should be concerned with following the Constitution, because that's the law that's put over us. And
hey, us Yankees are not accustomed to hearing criticisms of Lincoln.
Well, oh, yeah. I know. In fact, I didn't used to really know much about it. I just studied it recently, and
uh-huh.
I'm appalled at what I've been taught.
Yeah, I've read some positions from Southern viewpoint too, and I've been surprised. Yeah, there's another side of the story than what us Yanks have heard.
If there's anyone interested in study, there's a really good book by a fellow named DeLorenzo called The Real Lincoln. They'd be mm-hmm. shocked to find out that he had editors of newspapers that spoke out against him before the war, thrown in prison, a congressman thrown in prison, just crazy stuff. I mean, got rid of half of the Constitutional Bill of Rights that we live under. And so you see today we got this huge, growing federal government, and Jim says there's been no welfare in this country. If you look right after the Civil War, Lincoln used that whole precedent to institute Reconstruction, which was a huge welfare program.
Mm.
And then in the 30s we had the Depression, and Roosevelt came in with a New Deal, which was another giant welfare program.
Yeah.
So really, I mean, if you care so much about the people that are going hungry and stuff, we should look at the root cause. Why are they hungry? I mean, if you look in the last 100 years, our dollar has been devalued to like 4 cents of what it was worth. 100 years ago, before 1913, we didn't have a federal income tax.
Yeah, I mean, poverty definitely is a complex issue and caused by a number of factors, and some of them are encouraged by the existence of the welfare state. But,
right.
So, I mean, you make a good point. Is that what you were calling about originally?
That was what I was calling about, because I just wanted to throw that in there, and I was hoping you'd still listening. You know, I think that
that
should be considered, because I don't think we as Christians should ever be too thrilled about growing the monster federal government. It's never shined pleasantly on the church.
It's an amazing thing that so many people trust the government to do
right.
what the best people in the country will not do on their own. You know, they say, well, the church won't do it, so the government has to do it. Well, who is the government? The government is these people that get elected, many of whom are shysters. They're almost all lawyers.
Sinners.
And almost all of them are corrupt. Why do we think that they are a better group of people to decide how to take people's money and redistribute it than say, the Christians do?
Right. Somebody like Jim, who's a firm believer in total depravity, to not see that.
Yeah.
I kind of scratch my head, you know. It's like you don't.
That is interesting. That good point. That's interesting because the founders of the government, they created the checks and balance system that we have to limit the power of the federal government because they believed in the Calvinistic doctrine of total depravity.
Exactly.
And so it seemed that a Calvinist like Jim would say, hey, don't trust the federal government because they're a bunch of depraved people. That's what the founders thought.
I totally agree. Yep. Yeah. And as far as like having like our rights of putting people in office because they want to do this or want to do that, you know, I would encourage everyone to realize, kind of the corrupt state that we've come to in our country. There's a good documentary called Hacking Democracy, which shows that basically what we've come to with our voting machines and all the cases of voter fraud just rampant across the country. And so I just encourage people not to really stay ignorant in the idea that, oh, we the people are actually, you know, in control of completely, you know, in this beautiful picture.
Well, you do make an excellent point that I did not think to make in talking to Jim, and I stand improved by it. And that is that when Jim was saying that the government is what the majority of the people vote for, that's not true. Our government legally is what the Constitution says, and that at this point would forbid the federal government from having a universal
right.
health care plan. And if the majority of people can persuade their legislators to amend the Constitution to allow it, then that would become the law of the land.
Right.
But until the Constitution is amended, if a majority of people vote for this program, it's just mob rule.
Exactly. And that's what's distinguishing between, or supposed to distinguish us from most other nations.
You know? Yeah.
Oh, I just wanted to add my two cents there and enjoyed listening to y'all talk.
Thanks, Craig. Thanks for your insights.
God bless.
Bye now. God bless you. All right. We got a comment also from another Steve in Beaverton, Oregon. Steve, welcome to the Narrow Path.
Hello. I guess somebody must have dropped off the line.
Oh.
I had my phone set aside. I couldn't resist calling. Just a couple of little comments. I think what you said about there needing to be a principle is kind of like the key to the whole thing. An example, C.S. Lewis talked about a basis for punishing people.
Yeah.
And sometimes people will say a basis, and I may have missed up. I missed the beginning of the program, so maybe you've already said this, but he said about the basis of punishing somebody, for example, can't be, as some people want to say, as simply as a deterrent, because you wouldn't even have to have a guilty person for that. You could grab anybody, punish them publicly, to use it as a deterrent. But there needs to be a principle. The principle has to be that it's just to punish them. You can't just punish them because you can't just do what works. That would be unjust. And similarly with taking people's money, well, and you may have said this too, what limit would you have? And not just taking people's money to make things more fair, which is what you hear a lot of the time, to make it fair. What if someone said, you know, you've had a good job for a while that I haven't had. I'd like to have that job now. It's my turn. I'd like to just take that so it's more fair. I think most of the people who had the job would probably say, well, you know, that's not right. I've earned it. I worked for it.
Mm-hmm.
There needs to be an actual principle, like you said. It's not generous to take money from somebody else and give it to somebody. It's just generous if you give it yourself. It's
right.
not merciful if you use somebody else to take care of a problem. And I could totally sympathize with what the other guy was saying. Jim, is that right?
Yes,
What you said, you know, the frustration, and I could see, you know, people living in the United States being ashamed someday for not doing better and being more generous. But the principle can't be that if someone's got more than somebody else, you can just take it and give it to somebody. That's definitely not generosity or mercy. That's like you said, that's actually stealing, even if it's legal. I mean, we had a time where the tax rates, what were they, 90% or something crazy like that? And
I don't remember. I don't know, but that obviously, you know, by Jim's argument, if enough people voted for that, then that's a just taxation.
Well, and see, that's like the last guy just said, that's why we don't have that kind of a system. Because it's kind of like when people vote for a smoking tax, they go, well, most of us don't smoke. That's where we can get our money, because we've got a minority over there we can outvote.
So it's mob rule.
We could certainly, yes, exactly, just as you said, we could certainly outvote the rich people and say, you know what? Why doesn't everybody have a nicer car? And, you know, what's the principle on which you base how much we should have? I know that's not what Jim had in mind, for sure. I mean, he's talking about taking care of important needs. But still...
Right, but if you don't go by principle, it's a slippery slope, you see?
That's it.
That's exactly right. I mean, it's like Craig was saying from Texas, that, you know, a little bit of more government intrusion in Lincoln's time, a little more in FDR's time, and it just creeps on up. If you don't have some principle that says, wait a minute, the government has no right to do this kind of thing, well, then there's no stopping the government from doing this kind of thing until they've got it all. They're taking it all.
That's it. And if you play it out to a logical conclusion, you say, okay, well, if we went all the way with this, since there's no principle, there's no real way to stop it in the middle. You can't just say, well, boy, that just doesn't feel right. You know, it's like, well,
yeah.
most of us are voting that it feels just fine. So
that's right.
Anyway, I had not intended to call, but I heard you talking about when I first picked up the radio, and I just wanted to chime in on that. Because that's something, of course, very popular that's being talked about now, those kinds of things, and it just always seems so strange.
Right, and it might sound like I'm making some kind of a political statement because the universal healthcare is, you know I'm not, but some people might. Because, I mean, right now it looks like Barack Obama is a leading contender for the presidency, and he's very, very strong on this universal healthcare thing, and it might seem like I'm saying, hey, don't vote for Obama. I don't care. I really don't care about politics that much.
Right.
I do care about justice.
That's
and,
it.
You know, and I mean, I don't want an unjust government. I'll live under one if I get one. I mean, the Christians and the communists in the Soviet Union, when it was there, they had to live under an unjust government because that's what they had, and they had to live under it. But, and I'll do the same. If our government becomes totally unjust, well, it's my lot in life to live under it until it can change. But that doesn't mean I'm going to be silent about what's right and wrong in the matter.
Well, I think that it actually, I'm less worried about living under the unjust than having it called just, than having it called fair. It bothers me more that people today will say these kinds of things are fair. I'm more worried about that. That's more concerning to me than actually having to live under something was unfair. I mean, maybe that's because I don't have it so bad
that's,
right now. Maybe
that's
I feel
excellent.
Differently practically, but it's that bothers me more when I hear people say, like, how, you know, that's a sign of kind of darkness around here, just that the idea of justice is so strange, that it's so unfair.
People don't know what it is. People don't know what justice is. Justice to them is whatever makes them feel good about something, you know?
And that they actually call it fair. It's not even that they're calling, like, well, we just have to do it. When they talk about we have to do this because this is what's fair, it's like, well, precisely not fair. It's definitely not fair. There may be a time, you know, where there's a reason why you have to do things that don't seem that fair. You know, people dying in the streets and, you know, we commandeer somebody's vehicle, whatever. You know, and that's understood. But it's not said it's fair. It's necessary, maybe. But when fair is available, it seems like you want to, you know, just as available, you want to stay within that, I think. But anyway, don't want to take up more of the time. I appreciate the show.
Well, you make a good point, and I really appreciate what you just said last, too, about you're more concerned, you're not so much concerned about living under an unjust system as you are about the loss of the concept of justice in our society. I would even go so far as to say I'm not as concerned about living under an unjust system and being a victim of the injustice as I am concerned about me being a perpetrator of the injustice in any way. I would much rather suffer injustice than stand before God as one who perpetrated it.
Yeah, I sympathize with Jim as far as, you know, looking around and saying, boy, you know, some of us have so much and some people don't have stuff, and that is a problem, and I think it's something that, you know, a lot of us will maybe someday be at least slightly ashamed of, maybe, but we need to encourage generosity. We can't just say, well, we're going to call it fair when we take something from one person and give it to somebody else. So.
Amen. Well, I'm on the same page with you there, brother. I'm going to take one more call, and I'm almost out of time.
All right. Well, thank you so much.
God bless you, Steve. Thanks for your call.
God bless you. Bye.
I know. Our next caller and the last one of the day is John from Salem, Oregon. John, welcome to the Narrow Path.
Thank you so much. Let me pull over to the side here so I don't kill someone besides myself.
Good idea.
Yes. Okay. So I guess all we're going to talk about today is this talking about taxes and such.
It looks like that's all that's come up today, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Just my thought, and I think it's been touched on before by you and others, but the thought is that if we as the church look to the government to do what the church is supposed to be doing, it just helps me not do what God's called me to do. So, and that's my thought is that, you know, oftentimes when people say, why is the world the way it is? And even when I'm talking to Christians, I go, I take it personally. I say, well, it's my fault. I haven't done what I was supposed to do. I haven't done what God has called me to do. Because if I don't assume my personal responsibility for ministering to the poor, preaching the gospel, you know, supporting the ministries of different people around the world and such, then I am to blame. And God will hold not only me, but the church responsible for the things we didn't do. So that's my thought was that, I'd say, if I look at the government and say, well, they're going to take care of it, so I don't have to.
Yeah, good point. And what an excellent point. You know, if the government's going to pick up part of my job, why should I ever think about doing my job? It'll be covered, you know. I think that's what happens with many welfare families. It, you know, now this is particularly a problem in the black community in the United States. A very large percentage of black children are born out of wedlock because their fathers, they get a lady pregnant, but they don't take care of them because they, I mean, they figure, well, she's on welfare. The government will take care of them. And yet it's a father's responsibility to take care of his own kids. And I'm not just trying to implicate blacks. It just happens that the black population is very disproportionately on welfare. But white people on welfare, any people on welfare, you know, why should I go out and work and support my family if someone else will do it for me? If the government will do it for me, if everyone will do it for me by paying their taxes. And the question, of course, is not whether the poor should be helped. The question is whose responsibility is it to help the poor? And, you know, if there's people who are sick and poor, is it everybody's responsibility equally to shoulder that burden, or is it the responsibility of their families, of the church, of friends and charitable organizations that voluntarily want to help the poor? I mean, whose responsibility is it? If the government does it, there will be no need for charities. There will be no need for families to step up to the plate. There will be no need for the church to. It will just the government can just replace everything.
Right. And we understand that God uses difficulties in Christians' lives to grow them up.
Yeah.
And so, you know, become like Christ. And unless there were needs that, you know, we would reach out and help with, I think that's the main problem with the government is that we're never going to mature into the people that God called us to be because we're letting the world do it. I mean, you know, I'm abdicating my responsibility and therefore I'm just going to stay my immature, selfish, you know, self-centered person. And not being the person that looks like Jesus. So.
Yeah, but growing up is hard. Who wants to do that?
Well, and that's why it's easy to say let the government do it.
I know. John, I agree with you. God bless you. Thanks for your call.
Thank you, too. Take care.
Okay, bye now.
Bye.
You know, if you're not familiar with this show, you might get the impression that this is just another conservative political talk show like you find on most radio talk stations, including Christian stations, but actually, The Narrow Path is not a political program. We almost never talk about politics, and as far as I'm concerned, we weren't really talking directly about politics. It just came in secondarily. As far as I'm concerned, we're talking about Christian duty and living the Christian life and being a disciple. And that, among other things, means taking a stand for what's righteous and what's just, and obviously that category does overlap. Issues of, you know, political policy and so forth. I'm not a politically savvy person, and we don't generally have politically oriented topics here. But we're, insofar as politics means justice, of course, that's our concern as well as any other Christian concern. You've been listening to the Narrow Path radio broadcast. My name is Steve Gregg. We do this Monday through Friday from about 2 to 3 in the afternoon. You can become a regular listener and a caller. Whenever you have questions about the Bible or about Christianity, we welcome those calls, or when you disagree with the host and want to say why. We will remain on the radio as long as the Lord wills, and he lets us know how, what as well as generally by whether we can pay the radio bills or not. We pay those bills entirely from unexpected money or unpredictable money from listeners. If you'd like to help support us, you can do so. Our website is thenarrowpath.com. You can find an address there where you can send money if you want, or there's a PayPal link, and you can help us stay on the air. If you don't want to help us out, feel free to enjoy the ministry anyway. God bless you. This is Steve Gregg. We'll talk again tomorrow.
Hello and greetings from your brothers and sisters.